Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, partnering with donors from all walks of life to improve Southeastern Virginia through grants, scholarships, and leadership initiatives. Learn more at HamptonRoadsCF.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Hamlee. Effective and authentic communication is the key to success for any relationship. And nowhere does this ring truer than in the marital space. Honest, open, and sincere communication can help you navigate through difficult situations. But do you know how to really talk to your partner? Up next on Another View, cardiologist Dr. Keith Newby and relationship expert Dr. Alvian Lyons with part three of our series on relationships. Keeping your marriage on track through healthy communication. That's next on Another View, right after this national, regional, and local news from NPR and WHRO News.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Hamlee. Of course, we have to start with a couple of things happening in the community. I want to tell you about the 9th Annual Black Philanthropy Month celebration that is coming up next month in August. It is called Afrofuturism, Black to the Future. I love that title. And it includes a technology fair featuring exhibitors in virtual reality, artificial intelligence, website design, cybersecurity, robotics, hardware, computer gadgets. And you're saying, what does that have to do with philanthropy? Well, according to Vivian Oden, who is vice president of one of the vice presidents over at the Hampton Roads Community Foundation, it is to celebrate the philanthropic contributions of Black individuals in Hampton Roads, and this year's celebration is an opportunity to learn more about the future of technology, its impact, and how philanthropy can play a role. Individuals can connect with individuals in the Black community making a difference in technology. Now, everyone is invited to attend. It is free. If you want to register by tomorrow, you will be entered into a raffle for a virtual reality canvas drawing experience. And it is happening on Thursday, August the 6th at the Chesapeake Conference Center in Chesapeake. And if you want more information, it starts at 5:30 in the afternoon and 7 p.m. is the program. For more information, 757-622-6951. And since this is the last Thursday of the month, and we always talk about health issues, 757 Breastfeeds is coming up. And that is also happening on Saturday, August the 8th. And they are at Old Dominion University's Web Center. All kinds of resources, vendors, raffles, milk donation drive, all the information you need to know about breastfeeding, all will be there. It is free. It is open to everyone. They want you to come out from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at ODU Web Center and Kauffman Mall. And if you want more information, email Ladobro, let me spell it, L-A-D-D-O-B-R-O at odu.edu. And find out more information about that. We also want to welcome Nicole Baker and Donovan Baker. They're joining us on the production side of the studio here at WHRO today. Donovan is an incoming freshman at Randolph-Macon who will be studying filmmaking in the fall, and he is shadowing us today to see how we put things together here at WHRO. So welcome, Donovan. We appreciate you being here with us. So it is the last Thursday of the month, which means it's time for Another View on Health and part three of our series on relationship success. With a combined 50 plus years of marriage between our experts, they bring both personal and professional insight into what makes a successful marriage. And those same principles can be applied to any relationship you may have with family, friends, children, coworkers, you name it. Please welcome back to Another View, relationship expert, author, and leadership consultant, Dr. Alvian Lyons. Hey, Alvian.
Hey, everybody.
And our favorite cardiologist is here. Dr. Keith Newby is a cardiologist with Bon Secours, where he serves as Hampton Roads Medical Group Cardiovascular Medical Director and Market Director of Community Health Improvement and Engagement. He's the co-host of Another View on Health, and he just won the Guinness Book of World Records for the world's longest title.
Hi, Keith. Man, well, I tell you. Well, thank you, Barbara. I appreciate that. I always feel so welcome when I come here.
I said
you could just do the director part. We'll hold off on the rest.
We'll hold on the rest.
I don't want you getting tongue tied.
Yeah, I know. He's just all that in a bag of tricks.
I don't know
right?
about all that.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly. So, part three, we're still talking about relationships and how to communicate. And as we were texting amongst ourselves and trying to talk about topics that we wanted to come up with, and Keith, really, you kicked off the whole idea of communication and why is communication so important.
Yeah, I think if you look at typically what happens is people misinterpret communication, things you say, how you say it, how, you know, and I've always been one to say, I've learned over the years, is when my wife and I have a discussion on a topic, I won't say argument, I said discussion.
Passionate discussion.
I will always take a pause. I will listen, and I always tell people, don't interrupt. Listen, let them finish. Even if you have to take notes, because sometimes depending on the, you know,
she's really going for it.
I got to make sure I'm getting everything down. So I will pause a minute, and then I will say, okay, let me make sure I heard you correctly and I understand your concerns, and I'll list them out, and then I'll respond. And when I do that, though, I've always tried to tell people, see the world through your partner's eyes. It's hard for a woman to know what a man thinks and a man to know what a woman thinks unless you can live that lived experience. So I always, when I intently listen, I'm trying to picture as a woman what she's thinking and feeling. And that always helps me to interpret better, because if I think how I think, it's not going to turn out good, because as a man, we just think differently. We behave differently. We do things differently. I always say, I think, you know, God was enjoying me, made men and women. He said, I'm going to laugh up here and see how they do this together. But I do think if you take the time to really understand your partner, I as I mentioned before, I know exactly what subjects to touch and what subjects not to touch. And sometimes I look at her mood that day too, you know, because I can interpret if I know the mood's good, that's a good time to bring something up. I would do it. But the thing is just understanding her or your partner and then trying to make sure you appreciate.
Is she tuning in today?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I talked to her right before I got here, and she said, "Oh, I forgot you had the radio show today." She said, "What's the subject today?" I said, "I don't know if I should tell you that. You may want to listen." So I'm over here lying. That's how we get busted. No, but I talked to her right before I got here. I told her what the subject was, but she knows. You know, we have those discussions a lot too, is how to listen to one another.
To one another. Yeah. Did it change over the years?
Oh yeah, because I was a jerk at first. I mean,
he could admit it.
Yeah, exactly. I got no problem admitting that. I mean, because I was alpha male to my heart. I mean, it's my way or the highway. I've said I'm making the money. I'm paying the bills. It's my way. I mean, but I wouldn't say that, but my actions suggested that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when I started thinking about it, I'm like, man, you know, that does sound like a jerk, you know. But that was like, I mean, I was 33, 34 when I married, when Peggy and I got married. So I was still young and impressionable. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, I didn't have a good, you know, really understanding of marriage growing up, because my father died when I was 7. Yeah. I didn't have any real role models. You know, all I could look at is TV. I mean, I was, you know, sometimes you see family, but you don't really look at the relationships. So that was one thing. And my wife gave me grace for that.
Especially back in that time, too, they were not going to show you.
Yeah. And the men in my family, they were alpha males, you know. So I saw that in that. So I just interpreted that as how I should behave. But then you kind of really think about it, you're in a partnership. You know, really, you know, it's not a dictatorship. And when you're in a partnership, you do have to take other people's considerations to heart. And that's one of the things I've learned over the years. But, you know, I'm still learning now. I mean, I'm not even suggesting I have any perfection in this, but I do constantly learn. I reevaluate. You know, and I would ask my wife sometime, am I screwing up or am I doing okay? You know, she tells me I'm doing well. And I could tell if she says, yeah, you're doing all right. I know that. Okay. I'm still messing something up here. You know, but I can always tell in the tone of her voice exactly what she's thinking.
So you're tuned.
Yeah, very much so. You should be. I mean, if you care enough about your partner, you should be attuned to them and understand them just as much as you want them to understand you.
Absolutely. Do men and women really think that differently, Alfie?
Yes. I wouldn't suggest that every woman thinks a particular way and every man thinks a particular way, but I would say that there are differences. And many of those differences, aside from the scientific and biological, because obviously we do know, even if, based on research, men are more likely to get in car accidents. Why? Because of the testosterone levels. They're more likely to drive fast. They're more likely to have immortality syndrome. If you watch small children, they're more likely to jump when they're small off of things that could kill them. You know, like it's just, and girls are just more cautious, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. So, and part of that is estrogen and testosterone, just how that works in the body, how it feeds the brain. So just given that, there are going to be some differences. But then when you add to that, the socialization of girls and boys, you know, boys don't cry, you know, so we teach young boys to stuff emotion and then we wonder why they can't access that emotion as adults when we train that into them. And so, and the same thing being true in terms of women being super emotional. Well, if you constantly nurture the idea that you're just supposed to access with no regard your emotion, because that's what you're told as you're younger. Oh, of course she behaves like that. You know, girls, they get emotional, right? Rather than being able to talk about critically thinking and self-regulating and processing in the ways that we might do with some of our boys, those things combined, it's the cumulative effect of all of that nurture and nature that ultimately we find ourselves with differing ways of seeing
and,
things.
And it also reminds me too of when, especially I hear this a lot in our community, you know, black boys, their black moms and their sons.
Oh, yes.
And the difference in the raising and and the teaching of them versus what they will do for their daughters, you know.
And they say that women, that we love our sons and we raise our daughters, right? Like, because we are preparing our girls to go be something else, but we have this love affair with our sons that is just a bit different. And if you just, if you look at the data, for those of us who are raising sons without a partner, very often we make our sons men too early. And we have, in essence, a relationship with our sons that are almost like a husband and wife relationship.
When you say he's the man of the house.
The man of the house.
Yeah.
So
he's 6 years old.
Yes. I start making you an adult long before you are ready to be an adult. And it often causes conflict when that son is ready to partner, because the moms often reject the partner. Because you are interfering with my homeostasis. Okay, like this is how we do things.
This is what happens in this house.
Exactly.
I'm curious, since you have boys and girls.
I do.
Do you raise your son differently?
I do.
Really? So you admit it?
And I completely acknowledge it. Absolutely.
Well, if you know this, why?
So the thing is that, and Keith will tell you, people know what's bad for them and they do it every day. That's why he will always be in business.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, exactly. Well, I tell you, just to chime on that, because I laugh, because one of the biggest, I think this is the alpha male part of me coming out here. So when I have to deal with patients that come in and I have to deal with sons and they don't have a father and the mothers come with them, I'm looking at them and I'm like, when you made that comment about they turn into adults a little early, I'm like, I may have some secondary thoughts on that one, because I'm looking at these guys. I'm like, listen, you're 30 something years old and you got your mama with you to the doctor. I'm just looking like, are you kidding me? This is the alpha male part. That is truly that. But I'm looking at these guys like, and I would get on the mom sometime. I say, you know, you're raising, I can't say what I want to say on the air, but I said, you know what you're raising. I said, I'm telling you, I said, he's not going to, if everything you're doing to me, because when I was 19, I left home when I was 19 and I never looked back. I loved my mom, but she had rules, and they were, and I respected that. Mm-hmm. But I was.
But you weren't ready to follow her rules.
I would say this. I mean, in my world, I felt like I was ready to move on, and so I left at 19, and I never looked back. You know, and that was okay. But I respected her for that, and I did understand her position. It's just when you're looking at, I guess, the way we were brought up. Mm-hmm. A man, you're independent. You know, you able to provide and protect and all the things we're supposed to do. If your mama's protecting you at 30-some years old, I'm having some secondary thoughts. I say all that to say, now, there are exceptions to every rule. They say if he's has some debilitation of something. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about
just a general.
General.
That could come,
people.
Come to the doctor.
Yeah,
by themselves.
I mean, I'm just looking at them like, are you kidding me? Now, if you just want her there for information, fine. But I've had times where the moms take over the conversation. I'm like, and I'm asking,
Him a question.
Yeah,
she's
answering, and I'm like, well, can he answer? And I said, does your tongue work? I mean, are you able to speak? You know, and I see that more than not, but only in single.
Yes.
Parent households.
Interesting.
Usually, because that's where I think it comes into play, because our biggest, may have mentioned to you earlier, the only time Peggy and I ever have any real disagreements is raising Marcella, because she's like how you're saying, how you're raising your daughter, and she gets on me all the time. She says, I baby her. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And, you know, but the one thing I told her, I said, but I do understand her point. But I tell her this, I said, a lot of times when I see young girls go astray, it's because they have daddy issues.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I said, I would never let any of my daughters see daddy issues, you know, so I make it a point, and sometimes to the extreme, to make sure she understands, A, that she's loved and appreciated by me, mm-hmm. B, that she knows that she's worth more, mm-hmm. and should behave as such. You know, I want her to have that level of self-respect that she always knows, but I want her to always know she can depend on me. If she needs to call me, I don't care what time it is, whatever, she can always reach out to me, and I will communicate with her. Even if I can't do it right that second, I said, give me a little bit of time and finish up with something. But I want her to always know that part, because as she develops into relationships of her own, I don't want her to settle for things that get treated in a way that's not.
And you really deserve. Become the, as the man in the house, you're really her first vision of what it's supposed to look like in terms of how she's supposed to be treated.
And one of the things that I've told her, because she's made this comment to me the other day, she said, Dad, I don't think I'm ever going to find anybody like you. I said, you will not. However, I said, no, you will not. I said, however, I said, what I want for you, as long as somebody respects you, and they know how to treat you with dignity, I will always support you. And I said, and I tell her, and I always give her those validations. I know you know what you're looking for in somebody. Mm-hmm. I said, however, I always got to caution her too. As a woman, though, understand that person that you're talking to. I said, I don't want you to get so independent that you are, because most men want the ability to try to protect and provide for their partner. I said, and if you block all that, I said,
becomes a problem.
That becomes a problem.
Yeah, because if she's like, my daddy does this.
Exactly, exactly.
And then, you know, and a man, and honestly, the man don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
They really don't.
Yeah.
They
I mean, they, really we don't. They don't, and I know I wouldn't want to hear it either. Right. So I always caution that part.
So I got to tell you guys, so I ran across, you know, when I do my research for the shows, I ran across this article entitled The State of Dating Black Men in 2026. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is an article by Dr. Aldwan Tart. He is a licensed clinical psychologist and an ordained minister. And he's responding to the State of Dating Black Men report to bridge the gap between single men and single women. So we're talking about communication. And the things that he talks about can also work in the marital space as well. But he says that after years and thousands of conversations with men who rarely get to speak honestly, here are the six things they consistently desire the most. Okay, we ready? Mm-hmm. One is to be met as a partner, not worshipped as a prize, but certainly appreciated. Okay. Number two, to have emotional safety, to be vulnerable without shame.
Okay.
Three, to experience structure and stability rather than chaos and confusion.
Absolutely.
Four, to be invited into your life and to get to know him truly, not interrogated at the door.
Okay.
which I, that, this is the one that got me though. To rise to your standards rather than survive your contempt.
I'm not sure I know what.
Yeah, I'm curious what that's supposed to mean.
And then to have grace extended to them while they do the work of becoming.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I read to rise to your standards rather than survive your contempt. The idea of sometimes women, we can be very critical of a guy, especially if he is still growing in career or in relationship or in, you know, whatever the situation happens to be. And so I took that to mean give me a chance to meet your standards, to rise to those standards instead of you coming at me so hard that I can never be good enough.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your thoughts, Miss Alvian?
I find it interesting. I mean, they all make sense. Five was the one that I was a little curious about how they were interpreting that. Does he give
keep
an
talking
explanation
while
of
I
that?
Looked in here real quick?
Because it, I get the, if conceptually what he's speaking to is having to cash the check that the last guy wrote. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if that's what the issue is, I understand that completely.
He says, when he holds back emotionally, not because he is unavailable, but because he is afraid of being too much, that is your invitation to create a safety that most women never intentionally offer. And the woman who does becomes unforgettable. When he walks away from contempt, but rises to meet genuine standards, he is self-selecting in your favor. And that's what he's saying, the meaning. The meaning of that is
something that's a little difficult to really conceptualize, like, what he's trying to say. Yeah. I think I got a just. I think your definition was a little easier to understand.
I would agree too.
Yeah. So overall, he says the opportunity hiding inside each of these six desires is enormous. When a healthy man wants to be met rather than worshiped, he is telling you that partnership is his love language, the very foundation lasting marriages are built on. When he holds back emotionally, not because he is unavailable, but because he is afraid of being too much, that is your invitation to create a safety that most women will never intentionally offer. And the woman who does becomes unforgettable. So she stands out from the others. When he walks away from contempt, but rises to meet genuine standards, he is self-selecting in your favor. So your standards are something he aspires to, is the way I interpret this. And then every one of these six desires is an open door, not a closed one. The question is not whether you are enough. The question is whether you understand the door well enough to walk through it. The man who is right for you is not looking for perfection. He is looking for a place to land safely.
Interesting. Not my experience. Personally, I've told you guys before that there are, you know, four primary things that I often hear men say that they need relationally. And I am not suggesting that these things aren't present inside of them, but the four I hear most often are respect, appreciation. I call them cookies because you guys know what it means, right? And encouragement. You know, like, those are the four things I hear most often from men.
And actually, I hear those in these.
They're woven into that, but the simplicity of understanding. The contempt element, I found that a little muddy in his explanation of it, personally.
Okay.
But I do understand that there is a difference between inviting someone, and I'm not talking about the invitation versus interrogation that he mentions in number four, but I'm talking about the way in which we meet our partners at a particular level. We recognize that that level may not be the thing that's going to make our relationships work long term, but it's good raw material. And I want to see it grow for us to really work well. So there's a difference between beating you down about what you are not versus inviting you to a higher level of who you could be. right? There's a difference between those two things. Mm-hmm. And that is even true in the way we raise our children. So even when we're saying, let's use a simple example, talking to our sons, you know, and his job is to take out the trash, I could say to my son, I can never count on you to take out that trash every Thursday. You know it needs to go out because Friday is when the trash gets picked up, but you never do this thing on time, right? I could say that because I'm addressing the fact that I constantly have to remind you. Or I could say, same issue, baby, let me tell you something. When you take out that trash, what that shows me is that you are responsible, dependable, and I can count on you. So what I would like to see you consistently do is to behave the way that a man needs to behave in this world, and the trash is just a way for us to test it out. So I'm addressing the same issue, but one of them I'm inviting you up higher, and the other one I'm pushing you down lower.
Yeah.
And it's the difference when we talk about it from a faith-based perspective, condemnation versus conviction, right? That one force is going to condemn, tell you what you are not. The other force is going to convict, to tell you you are behaving less than what you are. So it's the way in which we have these communications that change how we see ourselves in the same issue, but the way we're approaching that completely changes the nature of the conversation.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about effective communication in relationships with relationship expert Dr. Alvian Lyons and cardiologist and co-host of Another View on Health, Dr. Keith Newby. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers to call to join our conversation. What are your ways of communicating with your significant other or spouse? Give us a call. Let's talk about it. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240.
Interestingly, one of the things that I have noted, and I've listened to Dr. Lyons and her, her discussion points, I do agree, and as a man, I do know, and I've told this to people plenty of times, women, you know, you guys have so much power mm-hmm. in a relationship mm-hmm. that you don't know how to wheel right.
Yep. More than we recognize.
Because with us, when you say things, I was listening to what you were saying, how you, the two ways you could talk to your son about the trash. That first example, I know as a man, I ain't doing nothing. You know, I mean,
it's going to be the automatic wall.
And even in our discussion points, when a woman talks to a man with respect and appreciation, mm-hmm. you know, we'll almost do anything. I mean, almost anything. And that's one of the things I used to tell my wife. I said, every time you fuss at me, you know I'm going to give you friction about this because you know I'm not going to do it just because you're fussing about it. I said, if you come at me a different way, I guarantee you the outcome is going to be a whole much different. And a lot of women don't recognize that part. Yeah. And those that do, you always see they're going to have the most successful relationships because and a lot of women are like, I ain't doing all that. Well, you know, I shouldn't have to do all that. I should be able to tell them what to do. I'm like, you can take that approach.
You can do it. But you get to own the consequences,
too. Exactly. Yeah. And that's where I kind of say, just like the same thing in reverse, there's certain ways I know if I say things a certain way to my spouse, she's going to interpret them differently than if I come at her hard, you know, and I think a lot of it's just based on how we were raised because a lot of our cultural differences in, you know, men and women and, you know, African-American and Caucasian and other groups, we do that, how we were raised impacts. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I always hate to hear is like, say a mother or a grandmother who had a bad relationship almost teaches their children and grandchildren wrong approach. Don't trust him. Don't depend on him or don't do this or don't do that. And I think that's just the worst piece of advice you could ever give anybody. Because to me, each person has to be looked at as an individual and how like I am may be different from another person and vice so forth.
So do you think that the younger generation though is more open to like when he was talking about the being there for me when and allowing me, man, mm-hmm. to be more vulnerable, to express Do you see a difference now compared to maybe when you and Matt first got together?
I can even look at the difference between my relationship with him versus my parents' relationships with each other. So just from one generation to the next to another, for Matt and I, friendship, and we've talked about this, friendship is core to our relationship. You know, we have been broke together. You know, like, so having nothing and having to make something out of nothing together, you don't, when you are poor together, you have to find all kinds of other ways to see and find value in each other, to find different ways of being able to create moments and joy. And it forces a level of creativity that access and, you know, wealth completely changes, right? And so it became necessary for us to be partners in a different kind of way as we grew. Go ahead.
But it's interesting, Alvian, because you two started out kind of in the same space, right? I mean, in terms of where you were educationally, financially,
we were both in college,
everything.
We were young. Yep.
But for women in particular who say there's no good men out there, or
I know lots of those,
or you know, I've got my doctorate. I'm Dr. Alvian Lyons, and you're not,
right?
Which is also
another issue.
You know, can you still find that kind of coming together even if you're not on the same level?
The
with
answer
each
is
other.
Yes, but it's very, but it is intentional before it's organic. So you have to intentionally create these spaces and own what's happening inside of the spaces. So it's not even just, I know what I need to do. I'm doing it quietly. We're not having any conversation about it. When you are older, when you are mature, you need to bring into the conversation what is actually transpiring inside of the moment, so that the growth is very intentional in the beginning, right? So say, for instance, I've said something to you that bothered you. Mm-hmm. Instead of just quietly letting that slide multiple times over, being able to
the point where I'm really mad.
Now
the next
I'm upset
time.
Because that's how you get to the building of contempt, right? That's what happens when bitterness really takes hold, right? So it is being able to own it inside of the moment, to say, you know, to your man, to your woman, whoever it is in the scenario, listen, and not necessarily while you're in the moment, right? It's being able to step back from it and own what I was feeling, find the words for what it is that I was feeling to the best of my ability, and be able to come back to you and say, can we talk about something? So we had this exchange yesterday, and I said this to you, you responded this way. What I heard on the inside was this. It may or may not be what you were trying to say to me, but let me tell you how it translates once it passes my ears. And you giving the other person the opportunity to say, that's not what I meant at all. So I can say to you, so tell me what you meant. They're able to say back to me, this is what I meant. And I'm able to say to you, so if that's what you want me to hear, here's how I need you to say it to me. So now we are having very intentional conversation that allows for an honesty and openness. We can both own our stuff. We can both be accountable for our stuff. Mm-hmm. And we can create safe space, because we're not doing it while we're angry, safe space to process here, so that as I learn how to do it intentionally here, eventually, I already know, when you heard Keith say, I know what Peggy's going to be thinking. Mm-hmm. I know how she's going to respond to so-and-so. That's where it's become organic now. He doesn't have to sit down and process. Peggy said 2 things on Tuesday and 4 things on Wednesday, which means she's at a 6 on Friday. He doesn't have to do all of that math. He can,
because now it's
organic. Mm-hmm. I recognize that now's not the time to say it. I'm just going to sit and listen.
Nick, question for you though. What happens if you say to him, this is what I heard, and they say, because that's what I meant?
Well, then.
Because that's where the argument comes. That's when it goes from a discussion to an argument, right?
And so, but that's a worthy argument. Okay. The problem is we're having arguments and conflicts over things that don't need to be arguments and conflicts.
Example.
So if I didn't mean it and we're fighting over something I didn't even mean to say, that was wasted energy. Because okay. if we had just had the conversation, we would have discovered there's no reason to put this energy in it. We could have just done this instead of that. But if you meant what you said, that's a useful argument. Because, and arguing is not inherently bad. We're actually addressing what the issue is. The bad part is when I move from you said this to you are this. That's where arguments change, because now I am deciding who you are as a person rather than the feeling or thought you had in that moment. I am ascribing an identity to you. You are lazy. You are insensitive. You are a jerk, as opposed to the thing that you said came across
as being a jerk.
Like this.
Yeah, got you.
And if that's not what you wanted to do, then you get the opportunity to be able to change that.
So what are the rules for disagreement? I mean, seriously, I mean, what are some of the things you need to watch out for in when you're in the heat of the moment? Because ultimately, when words come out of your mouth, you can't take them back.
You can't take
and
them
so,
back.
And so what's the fair way to fight, I guess, is my question.
So I always say that, it doesn't belong to me.
I shouldn't even say fight. I should say
disagree. Because conflict is not bad.
Right.
Okay. Right. It's the attacking that's the bad. So it's really the fighting. We're fighting the issue, not each other, right? It's attacking the issue, not each other. So if the issue was you were late, I was waiting already, set the reservations or made the meal, was waiting for you, let's attack the issue. So this is what happened. This is what should have happened. If you had called me to let me know, that's the issue.
I could have rearranged the
Absolutely.
Issue.
Absolutely. Right. But if we're attacking each other, you're a freaking this, you always that. When that happens, that is not a healthy or effective arguing or navigating conflict at all. It's where we change from the issue to the person. That's where it goes wrong. So I would say there are two things that are true. One, attack the issue, not the person. And two, to be honest does not require brutality. When people say be brutally honest, you don't have to be brutal about anything when you're honest with someone. Always keep in mind that when you love someone, the goal should never be to hurt them. It's to create understanding. So before that thing falls out of your mouth, ask yourself, what is my intention in what I'm getting ready to say next? Because if the next thing out of my mouth is so-and-so's husband would have never done that. Honey, what was your goal when you opened your mouth and said that? Exactly. And if your response is so-and-so's wife, she would never let herself go like that. Baby, you don't want cookies anymore. you just shut the whole factory down.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's the things... What is your intention behind what it is you're getting ready to say? Because we can cut our partners so effectively because we are so intimately connected with them. So our job is to know where the point is that you could take your partner over the cliff and then to love them enough to never take them there. That's our responsibility.
That was a lot. You know, one of the points you made that I keyed in on was you were demonstrating, you know, what you should not do. And one of the things that somebody taught me years ago was the you and I statement. Don't ever say you always do this, but, you know, I feel this happens a lot when I'm having conflict or whatever, because when you start saying you, that's accusing. And I do see that even when you did the demonstration, I was like, yeah, I could see how that could be interpreted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think if you, and this is where that my Christianity comes into play as I've gotten closer to God, as I've gotten older, is I've noticed that takes over more. Things that used to upset me don't upset me anymore. you know, it really has not. I mean, I think I'm mellowing out in my older years. But things that things that used to bother me because of my Christian walk just don't bother me anymore. Yeah. She, you know, Peggy may do some things at times I don't agree with, but, you know, I don't get to that point where I'm like, you know, we're going to really get into the base. And she could tell you, we don't really argue much anymore at all. I mean, I'm like, we may have a disagreement here and there, but it's not, you know, it really has not been that bad at all. And I just say, and I just tell her, I say, listen, I hear you. I understand where you're coming from. And I heard you and I'm listening. And I really try to make sure she knows I am listening.
Let me ask you two a question then, because sometimes when we are in conflict with our significant other or our husband or wife, and we want to go talk to somebody, should you talk to your bestie about what's happening in your relationship? Should you involve your in-laws in what is happening in your relationship? Where are the boundaries?
I think it's different for every couple. I think the most important thing is the person that you're having a conversation with, are they going to be part of the solution? So if you're bringing people into this that are not going to be helpful in its resolution, then you should probably keep your mouth shut.
Because the other issue, too, is then they're going to be giving your significant other
the side eye. They have all kinds of things. Because then, they will not get over
right.
it
exactly.
when you get over it.
Right. And then right? they would be mad at you because you got over it.
Because you let it slide. Mm-hmm. So it really is a matter of, like, where is their loyalty to, right? So, for instance, with my older children, and, you know, I have both adopted, yeah. and so mm-hmm. my adopted children are even older. But when my children and I are having conversations about the things that are happening where their partners are concerned, I always say that I've got two dogs in this fight. Okay. So you're not the only dog inside of this fight. If I am loyal to the relationship or the marriage, then I'm interested in first the health of that, which may mean that you're the person who's wrong inside of this. So I'm not taking your side just because you're my kid. If you're wrong where this is concerned, you are wrong, because my loyalty is to the higher thing, right? Mm-hmm. But if the situation is you're having a conversation with someone who is just, girl, I'm with you no matter what you do, that often is toxic and poisonous. Same thing is true with your boys. If they're going to just let you do whatever, because, dude, if you get out this relationship, we're going to be able to do some of the stuff we used to do when we were single. So I'm thrilled if this does not work out. Yeah. You've got to be careful who, and the Bible speaks to who your counsel is. So I'm not necessarily anti having conversations with other people, because sometimes in isolation, we just repeat all the bad things we were already doing. So it is important to have good counsel. I am very particular about who Ooh. Your counsel is.
And it's got to be trust. Trust is, mm-hmm. it's, has got to be in the center.
Well, you know, the other thing is the motivation in which, because some people go to people because they want them to agree to their point.
I want you to affirm mm-hmm. my position.
Yeah, and I think that if you, I say I'd never involve anybody. Yeah. Period. Yeah. But see, I'm at a place now, I don't feel like I have to.
Right.
I mean, I can work things out with my mm-hmm. spouse. I don't have to.
But even in the early days,
I really, because sometimes people's motivation is just mm-hmm. not on mm-hmm. point, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, I just never felt a need personally to do that, because mm-hmm. I always knew it to that point. And I've seen times where people will start to have, you know, because how you convey a point of what the conflict is may be, you know, because, you know, typically you're going to say things to your advantage point.
Of course.
Nobody wants to make themselves look right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. So the thing is, you may have that other person have a negative vibe on the spouse mm-hmm. when really what happened wasn't quite how they conveyed it. You know, so mm-hmm. you have to take into account those things too. So in other words, and to not even go down that path, I tend to just say, well, let me just self-evaluate, you know, but everybody can't do that. But I feel like I'm definitely in a place to do that. But the thing is, when you start talking to people, you involve other people in your relationship. I just, you know, if you have a friend that, you know, you could just talk to and they will just listen. And sometimes just listening without comment, you know, can be helpful. But the thing is still what seeded in that person's mind from that moment forth. Especially you involve in-laws or brothers or sisters or children, you know, your children should really know what's going on in your marriage.
I will say to that, that most men don't bring other people into the conversation. Mm-hmm. We are far more likely to do it as women. And sometimes I tease this partly because, you know, our word count is a lot higher. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we...
I'm not touching that one.
That is scientifically proven.
We weren't even finished
when we had the argument with our partners. We still had 217,000 words left. So we need to bring other people in because it's got to be someplace to pour all those words. Okay. You guys got a shot glass. We had a pitcher full of words that we needed to share. Yes. And we knew we drowned you already. So we went to go share that with others.
Okay. I'm trying to get a bunch of stuff in under our umbrella because, you know, we got a lot and we're running out of time. Is it okay for couples to have opposite sex relationships, friendships outside of the marriage?
Personally,
or dating, or if you're a committed couple?
Well, it kind of depends on the relationship and your how solidified are you in that relationship. But I just, safest is no. I mean, I mean that's a safe approach, because I tell you, you know, because it depends on the, you know, sometimes you can do things that makes your partner insecure about it without you really realizing that. Mm-hmm. I just find it safer to say no. I mean,
you know, it's interesting
personally.
Because since I was such
that's not my answer, just for the record.
I know, and I'm gonna get to your answer, but because I got married at such an advanced age, I mean, to me, it was unrealistic to expect that Maxie did not have other friends. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, and for him to expect that I wouldn't have other friends. Mm-hmm. But when we came together, that went away, except for his best friend, who became one of my dearest friends, you know, and it remains that way to this day.
Well, I think that part, if you're bringing that person into both of parties,
and that's the point.
That's where it would be a little different.
So if he would have said, nope, you can't meet, you can't engage, no, then that would have been a whole different thing. What was your answer?
She's kind of a different sort, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a different sort. I could see her saying opposite.
Exactly.
You know?
And I would agree with Keith, but in some relationships, can't handle it.
Yeah.
Like, there are some relationships that it is more problems than it is worth, right? So, like, it's easier to just keep it clean, and we're not going to do that. But I grew up with nothing but boys. So, like, I didn't have good girlfriends. I had all of my boys, and I've never dated them. We've never had romantic relationship. They are just my boys. And the thing is, ladies, please hear me when I say this too. The more you have male friendships, this may need to be prior to getting married, but I'm just saying, the more you have more male friendships that have never been physical in any form or fashion, the more you will understand the needs and the psychology of men. So part of the reason why I find that I am able to be bilingual from a gender perspective is because my foundational friendships were with boys. I was the first girl after two older brothers. So my world was boys first. Mm-hmm. And when Matt and I started dating, the first person he met was my best friend back then, whose name was Ray. And so when we came back from our first date, Ray was already at the house hanging out with my parents. So the first thing Matt met in my world was another guy. So we have very clear rules in our relationship in that I don't lock phones. My guy friends call. If you're going to call me at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know I'm laying next to him. So I will talk to you on speakerphone. So if you want to say something crazy, you got to deal with that. But like, I say that to say that I don't hide anything so that he can always feel comfortable about it. And 9 times out of 10, he'd be like, can you take him off a speakerphone? I don't need to, you know, like, and I say, I love you to my guy friends. They say, I love you to me. But it is not.
But it's not the way you say it to Matt.
It's not. It's not that. Well, I'm not trying to sleep with you.
Well, I tell you, the only thing I would caution on that is men, we're different.
Oh, you mean in terms of they would all?
Yeah, we'll. You know,
Matt says that too.
One thing about that is women can do that. Uh huh. men typically, if we're being friends, we're waiting.
Oh,
I mean, you know, that, I mean,
okay,
we're waiting.
I hear
now,
that a lot. Yeah. I hear that a lot.
Now, you know, and she has that kind of personality that
they're
gonna try, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they'll just wait. They'll say little things and see what
just
the response
to see
is.
How you respond.
And
yeah.
And if she doesn't respond, they'll let it go, but they're just in waiting. Because this is where the testosterone kicks in for men, because that's just the way we are. So when you have a man that's, and there are some legitimate, you know, male female friends, but you can always tell because the man really didn't want to be bothered, generally speaking. I mean, he'd hang out, do some things, but it's kind of like there's a, like it's a ledge that we were not going to go over. Now, if we're having ulterior motives, then that's a little different. But typically,
and if you're having issues too, then that makes it easier.
It changes the dynamic.
Right? It changes the dynamic.
But like for me, I have very clear lines for. I mean, my guy friends can tell me whatever you want to tell me, but we're never going to be in scenarios that's going to be problematic. Mm-hmm. I never want to create a scenario where your wife or partner is uncomfortable with me. I will talk to you. You can put me on speakerphone. She can hear all of this so that she's comfortable.
But you don't feel
the
need.
Dynamics.
You're not necessarily her friend.
Yeah, I'm not always friends with the. We're pleasant.
Pleasant, right. Right,
but like the
right.
friendship was with him. We right. worked together. We built a business together. We, you know, have known each other forever. My friendships very often are with the husband, but I understand what I need to do and be so that I don't create conflict or issues for him mm-hmm. because I understand what it might feel like to be on the other side of that. And very often the wives will call me and be like, thank you. For what
because you just told him that he
I
needs
said
to-
what he needed to hear that he could not hear from her.
Yeah,
I can say that, and he knows when I say it. This is not a girl thing. This is you were wrong in this. Go fix that. So most of the wives adore me because I am the guy. I'm the girlfriend that's the guy friend kind of thing. But simultaneously, I understand exactly what she would be feeling to tell you what she was trying to say when you took mm-hmm. that the way that you took it. Mm-hmm. So I do have lots of my guy friends. Those are my babies. I love them. I do.
We got 1 minute left. Each of you get 30 seconds. Tell somebody something to say. Hang in there. Communicate well. It's going to be all right.
I'll just take my 30 seconds on the question because we didn't touch on this as counseling. When should you get it? And I know we don't have long, but if you could take
I will say, and so let's use that for the 30 seconds. Okay. I would say that just like you take your car to the shop before the engine blows out is what you should do in your relationship. Sometimes it's not because it's broken. It's because you never wanted to get there. So it is really good to have some conversations on occasion that are just about us being able to talk, not because something's wrong, but because we want to keep it right.
Absolutely. You guys, you know, we can continue.
You know, I'm down.
I love having these conversations because we keep it real.
And healthy relationships keep healthy bodies.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. We didn't touch on that, but how the health is impacted.
Yes,
okay.
They are
connected.
We talk
about it sometimes.
Thank you, Dr. Keith Newby. Thank you, Dr. Alvion Lyons. And we hope today's show has inspired you to really think about how you communicate with your spouse or others close to you. Life is so much better when there's understanding between individuals. You can listen to this show again or share it with a friend at whro.org/anotherview on Spotify or wherever you go for your podcast listening pleasure. We are so excited about next week's show and look forward to seeing many of you in our live audience as we broadcast from the Eastern Shore and the Impact Center. Hear how the former Rosenwald School is showing up for the community in the 21st century. Our theme music is an original composition created especially for Another View by Jay Sennett. Lisa Godley is our show producer. Jordan Christie is our audio engineer, and Dr. Barry Graham answered our phones. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Let your love language be authentic communication this weekend, and let's get together again next Thursday at noon for Another View.
Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, carrying out your charitable wishes forever. Whether it's helping shelter animals, feeding the homeless, enhancing the arts, or supporting students. Learn more at leaveabequest.org.